Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. We've been talking today about how the U.S., and Massachusetts in particular, should respond to the refugee crisis affecting Europe. Heart-rending scenes of people fleeing war-torn Syria and elsewhere have prompted calls for the U.S. to accept more immigrants.
So let's make that the starting point of the latest in our regular conversations with members of the state's congressional delegation. It's a busy month in Washington, from the migrant crisis, the debate over Iran, the Iran nuclear deal, to what's expected to be a fierce debate over the budget and a possible government shutdown. So joining us now is Congressman Stephen Lynch of South Boston. He represents the state's 8th Congressional District. And Congressman Lynch, welcome back to the program. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Anthony and Deborah. Good to be with you.
So let me ask you about how the U.S. should be responding to the migrant crisis in Europe. You've probably been hearing a little bit of the conversation we've been having. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh has said he'd be willing to welcome migrants in Boston. Governor Charlie Baker has suggested he'd support that as well. What's your view? What has to happen?
Well, I think we have to coordinate our efforts with Congress and with the president. I think that the president announced last week that he would be willing to take 10,000 from Syria.
That's right, 10,000. Yep.
I've had an opportunity to visit a number of the refugee camps and refugee centers in Turkey on the Syrian border and also in Iraq. And I certainly think that the current crisis has lent a sense of urgency for Congress on this issue that was not there before.
Well, Congressman, let me ask you about the president's proposal, 10,000 Syrian refugees. It would represent an increase, but we just heard from Paul O'Brien at Oxfam, who says that's not nearly enough, given that we're in the midst of the worst refugee crisis since World War II, and the United States really needs to step up and take many, many more by a factor of 10 at least.
Yeah, this is a refugee crisis. This is not a situation. This is akin to the urgency that we saw during the earthquake in Haiti, or the problems that we saw in Sierra Leone a number of years ago, where in my district we had families just arriving at Logan Airport, just children.
Sure.
from Haiti. So it's these folks are in extremis. They're in dire straits. This is not the normal immigration debate that goes back and forth. This is something that has, as I said before, a sense of urgency to it that is undeniable. So we need to come to the forefront and see what we can do to help. I also think we had an opportunity several weeks ago to talk with folks from the Peace Corps and USAID, where they feel that we're not doing enough over there. We are co-funding at Adana. We are co-funding food and medical supplies with the Turkish government there. I think we have about 100,000, 120,000 refugees at Adana and a number of other large camps along the Syrian border. But I think we could be doing more in terms of the funding that we offer, and especially doing so in a multinational coalition, really making an impact with large numbers of people. Ironically, when we sat with many of the Syrian refugees in, and these are mostly from the conflict zone there, north Aleppo and the area around there, they did not want to come to the United States. They wanted to go to Germany. When we had discussions with them, they said there's a rooted community in Syria. A number of them had family members who had shops and had been in Germany for some time, and their first choice obviously was to go home. They said, we have farms, we have villages, we have communities, and we want to go home. That's their first choice. And over this past year and a half, 2 years, many of them had a vision of going home, that somehow the conflict would be mitigated to a point where they could actually return. Now I think, though, they've gone past that point where that hope is diminished, and now they actually are considering the next step. But in many cases, they're looking at places in Europe, principally Germany.
Yep.
and their their second choice would not be the United States. I don't know. We can obviously work with them on it.
Congressman, I want to just let me just jump in because there's just one more point I want to ask you about. We heard a caller in the first segment, Bob from Quincy, who raised the question, can we afford this? I mean, he made the point that just about everyone in the U.S. is an immigrant of some sort or another, but these huge numbers of immigrants migrants that would like to come this way. He raises the question, how can we afford it when we've got so many things in this country that we can't afford as it is?
We can afford it if we have a plan. We can do what we can afford. In other words, figure out what our capacity is here. And bear in mind, you know, a few months ago, I was down in El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala, and we've got to deal with a situation there where we've got, you know, maybe in Central and South America, 60, 70, 80 million people living in extreme poverty, under a dollar a day, and coyotes basically pushing them to the border.
Right.
Now we've got, in Africa, 300 million. In the same situation, or worse. We have them in North Africa in conflict zones. So we've got to figure out what we can do and recognize the need that's out there and try to address that in some coherent manner.
In some coherent manner and with some urgency. Congressman, if I may, I'd like to move on. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Iran nuclear deal. You supported the deal. The president was able to win this one because of a veto threat, but a majority of your colleagues oppose this deal. And the most recent Pew poll found that just 21% of Americans support the agreement. What do you know about this that a majority of your colleagues and apparently a majority of Americans don't seem to know?
Well, I think the alternatives. Number one, I think that most people in the United States see this as a U.S. only and Iranian negotiation. That's what they're looking at. Our coalition, and this includes the sanctions coalition, involves much more than that. And we use those sanctions to get Iran to the negotiating table and to put a plan there that would delay and diminish their chances of acquiring a nuclear weapon. And I think that the plan in itself, while not relying on the trust of trusting the Iranians, but having inspectors on the ground, is the best measure available to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
Hmm. So it's the best given the alternative. I want to ask you about a piece you wrote recently in the Boston Globe, and this was a piece in favor of the agreement. And you said the agreement affirms Iran's right to develop a peaceful nuclear program just like any other nation. But then you went on to say the problem here is that Iran is not any other nations. It's a supporter of terrorism. Its leaders have steadfastly denied the Holocaust, denounced Israel's right to exist. Death to America remains a popular theme in Tehran. So, I mean, that's what you wrote in a piece that supports the agreement, but those are points that opponents to this deal would make pretty fiercely.
Right. I'm not trying to rewrite history here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to deal with the situation that we have. All those things are true that I wrote, and I wrote them purposely to demonstrate that I'm not acting out of some altruistic or blind notion that they are going to be easy partners in this. The idea here, the force of it, the way this operates is by having the IAEA on the ground in their facilities, converting the Iraq heavy water facility to peaceful means and making them redesign that facility, opening up Fordo, opening up Natanz, and like I say, putting a full and comprehensive inspection regime on the ground, which we don't have right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Congressman, I want to move on and ask you about a couple of other things before we let you go. Another big issue ahead this month is that the government needs to be funded by October 1st, and that will come probably in the form of a continuing resolution. The president says he won't sign a budget that doesn't raise spending on both domestic and defense programs. Republicans disagree with that. How is this going to play out? And are we going to avoid another shutdown of the government?
We will avoid it, but just barely. And I'm not sure for how long that, you know, that there'll be some type of continuing resolution and the Republican majorities in the House and Senate will kick the can down the road a bit, but they'll also refuse to acknowledge some of the big issues that we have with infrastructure and other needs that are out there. We're not addressing those. They're pretending that they're saving money, but in the meantime, our roads and bridges are deteriorating, and that cost is merely being pushed off into the future. It's not going away. It's just being postponed.
Right. Well, another thing that's happening is I gather that there's going to be a debate about defunding Planned Parenthood later this week in the House. And this comes ever since a series of videos emerged that showed members of Planned Parenthood discussing fetal tissue procurement, possibly for profit, say conservatives. Conservatives have been demanding that the organization be defunded. What's your response to this?
We have faced this before. This isn't the first time that the Republicans have put something on the floor to defund Planned Parenthood. I've spoken on this issue on the floor, and my main point to my Republican colleagues was this, that right now Planned Parenthood provides contraceptive counseling to about 300,000 women per year. Those are women who don't want an unwanted pregnancy, and they get counseling and services from Planned Parenthood. If we eliminate their funding, we eliminate the counseling, the contraceptive counseling to those 300,000 women next year. So how many unwanted pregnancies and how many abortions are we generating because we're cutting off all the funding from Planned Parenthood? If they are truly, you know, there used to be some common ground here between the pro-life and pro-choice movement. We used to say, hey, you know what? We're all against unwanted pregnancies, and that will be an effective way of reducing the number of abortions. Can we work on that together? The answer used to be yes, but now the Republicans are saying, no, we want to cut off even those funds that we know and are proven and to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies out there.
And Congressman, of course, this debate is going to play out. I'm afraid we're out of time, but I'm very grateful for the fact that you joined us today. That's Congressman Stephen Lynch of South Boston. He represents the 8th Congressional District. Congressman, thanks so much. Come back and talk to us again soon.
Anytime.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.